Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of this, the 201st episode of the show. And thank you to everyone who has been supporting us directly through this process. You can join them and get access to our full-length ad-free show and our Patreon-exclusive weekly sister show, Extra Message, by going to patreon.com/UKTech. And now is a wonderful time to try that out because we have been doing a lot of stuff with patrons recently. Not least our live episode 200, which we recorded yesterday, Ian. I think it went very, very well. We're going to talk about it.
It certainly did, Nate.
In a little bit more detail later on in the extended version of this show. But safe to say, it's out for everybody to listen to now. And thank you to everyone who helped make that happen. But we didn't want to get away from the news for this week, which is why this main episode of the show is going out just a little bit after the special 200th episode. But we've got a few things we want to talk about. Shall we begin that process about now, Ian?
What, podcasting? You want to start the podcast? Let's.
Okay.
Go for it.
Here it comes. Now, some major sporting events in Britain were just in time this year to escape the government-imposed ban on public contests, including February's UK wife-carrying race 2020 in
thank goodness.
In Dorking. I know. It's great. Sadly, Kate and I were not able to attend this year. Something to do with moral objections. I don't know. Something along those lines.
It's a shame because your wife is quite carryable, isn't she?
Well, I don't know how you know that, but I can I can confirm that she it is able possible to lift her, and I'm sure I could win an egg and spoon race with her.
I would like to assure you I've never lifted your wife up.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if you had at some point, and it wouldn't bother me, depending on the circumstances, but good to
Fair
know.
Enough.
Thank you.
Well, there'll be no lifting of anyone by anyone for the foreseeable future, will there?
No.
Apart from people who are already living together.
And, sadly, the Gloucestershire Cheese Rolling Competition, which was due to take place next month, was too late and so has been postponed, along with its slightly higher profile horse-based version, the Aintree Grand National in Liverpool. However, unlike Britain's annual wife-carrying and cheese-rolling competitions, Ian, the Grand National is a major televised event. And so this year, rather than commit TV scheduling equicide, broadcaster ITV screened
Very good.
A digital virtual race instead. This was yesterday at the time of recording, Sunday, so that was Saturday. I could have just said Saturday.
You could have said the day we recorded our 200th episode.
You know what? It was almost at exactly the same time.
Was it? That explains why I didn't see it then.
Yeah.
Because I was busy.
Well, who's to say? Now, The Guardian explained in advance that using CGI, a field of 40 virtual horses and riders, I assume, and riders, were to tackle the famous fences over 4.5 virtual miles, cheered on by tens of thousands of virtual racegoers, and followed, nice touch this, by a virtual ambulance, which won't be a drain on NHS resources. You know, what with it not really existing and all that.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got questions, mostly about, were they expecting someone to virtually faint?
Well, it's more that jockeys do sometimes, non-virtually, fall off horses and get injured, and that's why.
Well, was there a possibility of that happening with the virtual race?
Yes.
Was it in that much detail?
Yes. And it happened. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It did happen. There was at least one horse that fell at a fence hurdle. But you know what, Ian? We'll come to that in a few moments. Mm-hmm. I just thought I'd give us a quote here from the Racing Post, which is a publication we have never cited on this podcast before. So 201 episodes in, and we're still breaking new ground, much like the virtual horses under the weight of their hooves yesterday. The Racing Post said, quote, "The simulation itself is made up of mathematical algorithms using data taken from horses' previous performances. The race's outcome would use a number of factors such as age, weight, form and weather conditions, but also contains details such as fallers, unseated riders and collapsed fences. Data on all the 40 runners from this year's race have been added and the computer has generated odds." And there have been three previous virtual Grand Nationals that weren't televised. And they have been, according to the Racing Post, strikingly accurate. So there is a lot of realism to this. It's not just people playing a game. It's mathematically modeled. It's been created digitally. And it's being broadcast as if it was the real race. The Guardian actually even went as far as hosting its usual event live blog for the virtual competition. And there was commentary being done by the actual commentators who would have been doing the show live via Zoom. I'm saying Zoom. I'm using it as a colloquialism for any conferencing software. But either way, they were doing it virtually. Would you like to? I've got a clip here, Ian. Would you like to have a quick listen to some live commentary?
Not?
Just yes, not too much though. I don't want to get sued.
Manifesto with a white cap is next. Then Lottery, followed by Les Cargo. Mr. Frisk beginning to weaken. Two out. Don't push it. Pitch slightly on landing. Hitch Hunter is a faller. He's crashed out. He still had every chance at the time. Don't push it in.
So some live commentary there, and I particularly enjoyed the sound effects. And I know obviously people can't see this, but you can go to itv.com. I think there's replays. I imagine there's some clips on YouTube. I did watch this in order to on catch up, just to find out what it looked like, and it did look like a lot of fun. One of the hosts did describe it as being a bit of fun, and it wasn't to be taken super seriously. But I did feel like this was essentially it's esports. You know,
well, I think you're right.
You know, but not being played live. And in fact, the event was pre-recorded. And so there were people familiar with the outcome who were sworn to secrecy, which meant that betting was still possible to be done at the bookies. But some bookmakers earlier this week did announce that any profits generated from that are going to be donated to NHS charities. So it's all in good spirits. It's all in good fun. But I do think that when we see the numbers of people that tuned in for something like this, maybe this could be the catalyst for more virtual sports hitting mainstream TV.
Maybe.
What do you reckon?
Well, I don't see any reason that we couldn't see more mainstream esports on TV. I would personally rather watch talented people playing a game than watch virtual horses run around a track. For me, that holds very little interest. I'm not interested in actual horses running around a track, let alone made up ones. But whereas with gaming, you know, these people are remarkable to watch. I have only really dabbled in esports, and I'll be completely honest with you, it would require that people were that games were explained to people in far better detail than they usually are. I find it quite difficult to keep up because these things move at such a breakneck pace in esports that actually it doesn't really bear a huge relationship to the kind of gaming that I'm used to. It is so unbelievably rapid, and the techniques used by players are so radically different to those that normal people use that it doesn't immediately, just because you've played a video game doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get the same thing out of watching other people do it.
You've raised a really interesting point that I hadn't considered about this, which is that it's fairly easy to understand how a horse race works. There are some horses. Yeah. The one that is fastest is the winner. That's basically all you need to know. Whereas when you watch a live stream of an esport like Dota or...
Yeah, with Dota being a particularly good example, because I believe that's one of the ones I have seen some of.
Well, shall we listen to a quick clip of what commentary for one of those games sounds like?
Let's!
Yeah, this dueling up against a solo lane. Funzie is having an okay time with this. He is out-leveling the CK, obviously. He has got seven last hits. CK still having a little bit more, but only a little bit. And once a gank actually is successful, that will be a big difference. Goblack still doesn't pick up the satire, though. Or at least the harpy, rather.
We'll include a link to that full broadcast in the show notes. So do click through the link and check out those guys if you want to hear a little bit more. But yeah, there's a huge difference. I have absolutely no idea, really, what I just heard, not being a Dota player.
Exactly, exactly.
But if somebody says the name of a horse and says, that horse is in front, I know that horse...
is running faster.
Is running faster. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I mean, I think there's a wealth of opportunity for esports. I mean, I think esports is a bit of a misnomer because I don't think there's a huge amount of sporting achievement in these things. But I think from an entertainment point of view, they're absolutely fantastic. And I would be very interested to see. I mean, obviously, I am familiar with Destiny 2 because it's what I play. So I would be very interested to see high-level players competing in that in things that I'm familiar with. But I also accept that that wouldn't be accessible to literally everyone. Well,
you and I are going to have an argument at some point about whether esports, professional competitive esports, qualifies as a sporting achievement, which is, I think, what you just said, because it very much does.
I don't want to take away from the achievement of it, because I don't think that it is without enormous skill. But I'm also wary of calling it a sport, because it isn't really a sport. It's an activity. I don't think golf is a sport either.
This is a debate we could probably have on another day. But all I'll say is that consider things like training, routine, discipline, cortisol levels, and physical and mental endurance.
I'm absolutely fine if they want to carry on calling it a sport. I'm not going to get angry about it. It doesn't bother me. It isn't a sport.
Well, go on. Get a bit cross.
Get a bit angry. No, I don't care.
All right.
You know, it's fine. These things have to have catchy names, and esports is one way of describing it. Seems perfectly reasonable. E-gaming doesn't have the same ring to it, does it? And no one's going to watch that.
No, I suppose not. But then, I don't know, people will watch anything, won't they? People listen to... what do they listen to? Who knows? Stuff. they listen to this.
Well, they do.
So the company behind the virtual horse race was a firm called Inspired Gaming. They are a Mancunian or Manchester based company, and it's something that the firm's done for a few years. It's done it for a range of sports. One of the ones I looked up on its website, it was NFL branded, so American football. It does a bunch of other ones as well. It does greyhound racing, which I'm far more in favor of than actual greyhound racing, because it doesn't result in wasted dogs or unhappy dogs, or indeed any cruelty.
My understanding of greyhound racing is that it is not a pleasant activity and probably shouldn't be a thing unless there was someone looking after the well-being of the animals, which I suspect there isn't at the moment.
Mm. Well, if you have watched the virtual horse race, we'd love to hear what you thought of it. We were too busy recording a live 200th episode to do so in real time, but maybe you did and maybe you had some experiences. You can share to hello@uktechshow.com. Podcast listening habits are changing in the UK and indeed the world over as a result of the current pandemic. Now, I've been looking into a range of sources for some good data and initially found a helpful write-up from Podtrac, which measures data from, it says, over a billion podcast downloads a month. It said a few days ago that weekly podcast downloads and audiences are trending downwards since March 9th, and that's in the US, while overall growth in downloads and audiences were still positive for the year to date versus last year. But what about the UK and the wider world? That is sort of our focus on this show. Distributor Acast also has data, although I should say, I think for full disclosure, Acast is the distributor and publisher of Text Message, but I'm just referring to a public blog it posted this week because it had some interesting data, and that's the only reason we're mentioning it. Acast wrote that contrary to what Podtrac reported, or that's my interpretation, that it is contrary, it's seen stronger than usual growth in listens across its network. And more interestingly to me, I think, it said consumption has moved from spikes in the morning, which is usually on people's journeys to work and evening as they wind down or journey home, and instead to just sustained periods of listening throughout the day. And it broke Europe out specifically and said that last week listening had grown for comedy and science and medicine categories 21.5% and 14.5% respectively in March compared to February. So ACAS concluded that people are clearly wanting to have a good laugh in challenging times, but are also seeking out greater amounts of scientifically robust information.
Oh, well, that's good.
On the
especially
situation.
Given what we're going to talk about later.
Yes.
So can I ask a question about PodTrack?
Yes.
If PodTrack isn't a host in the same way Acast is it?
PodTrack isn't a host. It tracks data. So unless it's changed since I last used it, the file is hosted on a server, and then that link is essentially fed into PodTrack,
right.
And the URL used to acquire the original URL sort of goes via PodTrack. So
yeah.
PodTrack is like a middleman and can see where that person is and track the download that way. Yes, whereas
they
Acast
should have,
hosts the audio files.
They should have good data, but Acast will probably have a little bit more information on... I don't know. Would they have better data?
I'm wondering. I'm privy to nothing. I've honestly got no idea. I literally only know basically what we've read out. So I don't know. But what it looks like is, at least right now, that perhaps in the US, slightly fewer people are listening to podcasts as a result of working from home. And maybe there are some macro trends at play in the US, perhaps to do with the value put on radio or something else. And perhaps this is something our pod brother, Tom Merritt, will be able to address at some point. But maybe there are other things there. Whereas in Europe, it looks like people are actually listening to more podcasts, but they are listening to a greater amount of specific categories of podcasts, and they're listening throughout the day. I did see good numbers globally that suggested people are using devices like the Google HomePod, the Amazon Echo, and Google I don't want to say an Apple's assistant as well to listen to things, which comes as no surprise if everyone's working from home. You would anticipate smart devices being used more for podcasting, right? But it does seem that there is a difference right now between European podcast consumption and US podcast consumption. And it'd
yeah.
be really interesting to get another month's worth of data returned to this and see if we can draw some comparisons and conclusions as to why maybe some of those figures were different.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense that people won't be listening to podcasts on their commute if they don't have one anymore. They might be, some of that daytime listening might be from people going out for their walk or to get exercise, which they wouldn't usually do during the day. And then obviously some people will have jobs where they're probably able to listen to podcasts during the day. I personally can't. I can't concentrate on work and have a voice podcast on. I could just about do, we've talked about this before, I can just about do music. But so my podcast listening has definitely taken a fall. But that's not a bad thing in a way. Once I'm commuting again, I'll be eating back into that back catalogue and picking up more of the shows that I love, but just a bit later.
Yeah. Well, we always ask everyone to send us an email about a topic that we touch on, and we always welcome emails on anything. But on this occasion, I'm actually asking for you to write in and tell us how your podcasting has been affected, your podcast listening has been affected, particularly interesting if you can tell us the country that you're in and maybe why your podcast listening has gone up or gone down. If you've got any insight or comments, it'd really, really be valuable, I think, for us to hear that, and we can maybe dissect it on next week's show. You can send that to hello@uktechshow.com. If you haven't got time to write it down now, maybe set a little reminder and send us an email later with what you can. I'd really, really love to hear that. And maybe we can shed a bit more light on this over the next couple of weeks. I wanted to briefly touch on something that made me facepalm so hard this week that I narrowly avoided going to hospital as a result of my hand going through my face, past my brain, and exiting through the rear of my skull like some sort of fleshy arm-shaped human bullet. Here's why. Mobile phone mast fires are being investigated amidst conspiracy theories claiming a link between 5G and coronavirus, the BBC wrote. It said there have been fires at masts in Birmingham, Liverpool, and in Merseyside, and a video allegedly of the blaze in Aigburth, which is in Liverpool as well, was shared on YouTube and Facebook, claiming a link between the mobile technology and COVID-19. Cabinet Office Minister Michael Gove said it was dangerous nonsense, according to the BBC. And the Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport said on Twitter that, quote, there is absolutely no credible evidence of a link. So I was curious because my instinct was to find all the people that have done this and yell at them in person at personal expense to try and, fix Britain, hashtag broken Britain. So I went to the UK's independent fact-checking charity, Full Fact, to find out where this BS originated. The company had conducted research into a claim that, quote, 5G networks could be responsible for the rapid spread of the new coronavirus. Along with an exhaustive list of scientific reasoning that will come as no surprise to anyone listening to this show, it published a conclusion that, quote, this is not true. There is no evidence that 5G networks are linked to the new coronavirus. So, for everyone listening, it's a no-waste Sherlock situation. But I think it's worth being mindful that there are people out there who, I mean, firstly, think 5G poses a significant health risk, which I'm very much in favor of science being done to determine that, but I'm also adamant that absolutely zero evidence has been presented by anyone to suggest that there is any significant risk at all. And we've talked about that on the show before. However, suggestion that a wireless technology is somehow responsible for a virus spreading, it's either somebody confused the fact that a computer virus is a thing that can technically pass over 5G and spread this far and wide.
No, that's not where that has come from.
It just isn't, is it? It isn't. And I've seen this written about in slightly less reputable publications than I would ordinarily read, but ones that nonetheless have extremely high circulation. And it's dangerous BS to be peddling, so let's please try and nip this in the bud if we can.
Yeah, I agree. And I've seen some shocking things. Now, obviously, with the current situation as it is, with a virus spreading across the world, it's important. Social media, I think, has played an important part. I feel like it's given people who would normally watch the news or whatever but might dismiss things, I feel as if social media has backed up, for the most part, the requirements, you know, the need for us to stay at home and not to interact with people where possible. So there's some good things that have come out of social media. However, since this outbreak started, there has been all manner of absolute nonsense spreading on social media. And I think a lot of it starts as a gag, honestly. I think it's I would blame places like online message boards. I mean, we all know the ones I'm talking about. It is very easy for them to whip up a quick JPEG with some stupid connections between one thing and another, and to claim that there's a link. For example, the other day I saw a quote from Bill Gates. Now, the quote itself, I believe, is probably real, and there's nothing in it that would worry me. It essentially talks about the birth rate being very high and the population of the world escalating. And in the quote, he talks about how if we get better antivirus technologies and stuff like that, we can have an impact on the birth rate. Now, I understand that there is a very obvious reason that you would say something like that, and that is birth rates are generally linked to infant mortality. So where there's a, you know, where there's high death rates in children, those populations tend to have more children to make up for it. Where there are good medicines and children broadly survive to adulthood, there is a smaller, you know, people have fewer children. So what he's saying there is essentially that. He says if we can bring down the population of the world by having better virology, you know, making sure that people can get better from things, therefore people won't feel the need to have so many children and the population will slow and that will be more manageable. But of course, that has been like, I've seen that tweeted as Bill Gates wants the virus to wipe out half the population or whatever. You know, I mean, it's I don't know whether it's a lack of critical thinking or whether these people are just happy to reshare stupidity because they don't understand what's being said and they don't have any desire to look into it. But it's just one example of this kind of thing. And of course, you know, how people would arrive at 5G. 5G was already a scapegoat before coronavirus. So the people who were trying to discredit 5G or to and perhaps in some cases for genuine reasons, like some people probably are genuinely scared that 5G is dangerous to them because they don't understand the science. So those people are going to jump on literally anything they can to boost their message and to try and get people to, you know, hate on 5G. So I can sort of see that, you know, this might have started as a silly joke, has escalated, and now somehow people are setting fire to things, which is just remarkable. I mean, that is very worrying because these things are common on the internet. Like we've lived with it for a good, you know, three decades now, and we know what the internet is like. But taking that from the virtual world to the real world is a concern.
I 100% agree with everything you just said. I'm not even going to repeat any of it. I think that was a concise explanation. The one point I'll just amplify is the one of fear. And you're right that a lot of misinformation is being spread as a result of fear and people latching onto things they believe, you know, they think supports a fear or a concern. But I think it behooves all of us to spot these things and try and tone down the reactions and help people understand, because where there is understanding, there is often less fear.
And there is a valid point that social networks do one thing that's quite dangerous in all of this. They tend to amplify conversations where there's a lot of interaction. So what people would obviously do when they see something like this is they would reply to it saying, you're stupid, this is stupid, there's no evidence of this, you're being ridiculous. Unfortunately, that tends to have the opposite effect on, and particularly Twitter, those that will give a boost to those topics, and more people will see them than would otherwise have done, and you know, retweeting things, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does bring that lunacy to a wider audience, and that has an ongoing effect and it causes problems. So I don't know, it feels like we're not going to persuade people to be more responsible online, but I think the social media companies need to be aware of quite what exactly it is going on here and their part in it.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Well, text message keeps you informed about the British tech landscape, but well, you know what? I'm reading this off my script. Tom joined us on episode 200 and he sent us a promo slightly ahead of time, as we normally would have his promo in the weekend. We didn't play it on the 200 episode show, but you know what? We're going to play it now. So here is what happened last week on Daily Tech News Show.
Hey, happy 200. This week on Daily Tech News Show, from fuel cell makers repairing ventilators to new tech for cleaner door handles, what tech companies are doing to help fight the virus. Microsoft's new consumer-friendly features turn Office 365 into Microsoft 365 for everybody. So many stories about what's wrong with Zoom, and one story about what Zoom plans to do about it. And will the data cap reprieve in the United States outlast the lockdown? Plus hot new laptops with hot new Intel 10th Gen and new NVIDIA chips. All that and more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Tom Merritt there. All of that stuff still highly relevant, particularly the Zoom stuff.
Yes, I was going to say actually about that. It'll be interesting to see how Zoom comes out of this as a company. I mean, it wasn't a widely known product before, and it's not aimed at people, really. It's aimed at business use, isn't it? So,
Well, it was.
But it'll be fascinating to see if this is the next breakout company that will be big as a result of this situation.
Well, you can let us know any thoughts you have on anything we've talked about this week or that you'd like to hear us talk about in future weeks. hello@uktechshow.com. Thank you so much to our patrons who have supported us for so many, years now. It's a really great time, I feel, for people to jump in and get involved in Patreon, getting into our Discord, which is our live chat room. We're all chatting to each other through the week on text, sharing GIFs. Ian's in there. Tom's in there, Marta's in there, Andy, all the regulars that you hear on the show, we're all in there, we all chat, and we record the show live every weekend as well, and that's open for people to jump in and listen to every single week. And you get extra message as well, which goes out in the middle of the week, which is a shorter show that's just for patrons at certain levels, and that gets very, very good feedback as well, and we've done 31 episodes of extra
Crikey.
Message. As well. So all of that is out now, patreon.com/UK Tech. It really helps us pay the bills that are associated with the podcast, which is basically what we like, isn't it, Ian? We like covering our bases.
It's very helpful.
Okay, well, Ian, it's been lovely being in your presence. It's a shame I can't smell you today because I'm sure you smell. Well, actually, you probably smell awful, don't you?
No, I've just had a shower, mate. I'm fresh as a daisy.
I just had a shower as well.
Yeah, pre-show shower. It's the thing.
Yeah. Well, maybe when we're... I know, I'm never going to shower with you. Goodbye, everybody.
Awesome.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.